Hey everyone, it's Hamish from the Young Investors Podcast. Myself and Brandon are excited to bring you your weekly rundown of the latest business and investing news from around the world. Now, a quick reminder before we get into the podcast is that nothing in this podcast should be taken on as personal financial advice. If you're ever unsure about your finances or investing, make sure you reach out to a qualified financial advisor. But with that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast.
Hi guys, welcome back to yet another episode. Hamish, what's going on, my friend?
What's going on? I just signed up to a new coffee subscription.
Oh, did you actually?
And yeah, I did. I shouldn't say new coffee subscription. I've never kind of been on one before, but I thought I'd try and get some good freshly roasted coffee for my machine.
From a
specialty coffee company in Melbourne called Rumble Coffee. It's not a sponsorship.
This episode is brought to you by. Yeah.
but it's really good. Yeah, it's good coffee. Yeah.
Nice. When did you start that? So just really recently.
Yeah, like just 2 days ago. Yeah. I don't know if I'll say it's pretty good. The thing with getting freshly roasted coffee is that it's a lot more expensive. So the subscription I'm on, which I don't know if I'll stay on it, it's like $30 every 2 weeks. For someone who drinks like 2-3 coffees a day, that kind of thing. So it's not a crazy amount, but what I was doing before was buying 1 kilo of Woolworths coffee beans for $12.
Right.
So it's significantly more expensive, but I think what I'll probably do is keep using the Woolworths $12 coffee beans and then just every now and then get the specialty coffee as a bit of a treat. So.
Right. Okay. Yeah. How much do you say? $30 every 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
$780 a year, Hamish. Do you know in 40 years, if you just invested that money? Oh, dear.
But would I be as productive? Probably not.
Exactly. <so. laughs> it's a necessary cost. Necessary expense. No. Yeah. But I think both myself and you, we are both of the kind of mindset that you're not going to get rich by cutting out your daily coffee. There's probably some bigger fish to fry in your financial life that's going to get you further than doing stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like one of those, people who know me, it's one of those very few things that I get a lot of joy out of. Like I have an
espresso machine. Yeah, you're a big coffee fan.
It's like a hobby really for me. It's more than just
You're so into coffee, you cannot believe that I don't like coffee. Like whenever we're together, you're like, oh, let's go get a coffee. I'm like, man, I don't drink coffee. And you're like, oh, just push through. Just trust me. Just push through.
Yeah.
You sound like
he needs to push through the first few coffees, get past the fact that it's a little bitter. Get used to it and then get
dependent.
Get hooked.
Yeah, exactly. No, I've never liked coffee. You're right. I don't like bitter drinks. So I don't like beer either. Beer, coffee, not my cup of tea. But bitter drinks. I have a sweet tooth. So drinks to me, if they're sweet, they hit home. If they're bitter, yeah. Bleh, don't like it. Anyway. Mm. Let us know down in the comments if you like bitter drinks.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, guess what I've got for us today? I've got a fraud story.
Oh, hello. Welcome back, Hamish's fraud story of the week.
Yeah, we've got an insider trading story related to Mr. Donald Trump's new public company. So there's a juicy insider trading story for everyone today that we'll get to. What else have we got today?
I just thought I'd talk a little bit about what Jerome Powell, he was part of like this panel in the last few days where he gave us an update on how he sees the US economy and the interest rate situation, which was very interesting. Very, very interesting indeed. So there's quite a bit to talk about there because he kind of confessed that maybe interest rates are not going down anytime soon. Mm. So we will talk about that. And beyond that, I've also just got a little follow-up. You know how we're talking about Tesla deliveries being so down as they face increased competition and probably weaker demand as well in this kind of interest rate environment. I've got an update on some potential reductions in their workforce. So, yeah, we'll get to that. But lots to talk about, Hamish. Should we get into it?
Yeah. Today's episode is brought to you by Seeking Alpha, your one-stop shop for stock analysis, market data, and news. Access expert analysis and news for thousands of stocks. View buy, hold, and sell ratings from members, Wall Street analysts, and Seeking Alpha's own algorithm. Screen for stocks using a variety of fundamental and technical analysis metrics. Access 10 years of financial data and company filings, and manage your portfolio by tracking your investments with price alerts so you never miss a buying opportunity again. Click the link in the episode description or head directly to seekingalpha.me/younginvestors to try Seeking Alpha free for 7 days. Do you want to start by taking us through what's Jerome Powell got to say? What's his update around interest rates?
Yeah, he did give us a very interesting update on how he is seeing inflation, economic conditions, and the likely path of interest rates over the next little while. So the article reads, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said Tuesday that the US economy, while otherwise strong, has not seen inflation come back to the central bank's goal, pointing to the further unlikelihood that interest rate cuts are in the offing anytime soon. The offing? What does that mean, Hamish? They're not coming. I've never heard. That's such an odd phrase. I've never seen that phrase before. In the offing. I don't know what that means. Anyway, it's not going to happen anytime soon, Hamish. That's the reality.
That's the gist.
Yeah. Speaking to a policy forum focused on US-Canada economic relations, Powell said that while inflation continues to make its way lower, it hasn't moved quickly enough, and the current state of policy should remain intact. And I'm going to read you a couple of quotes, and then I'll talk about why these quotes in particular are so important. So he said, quote, more recent data shows solid and continued strength in the labor market, but also a lack of further progress so far this year on returning to our 2% inflation goal, the Fed chief said during a panel talk. He noted that, quote, 12-month core PCE, that is one of the most important things we look at, is estimated to be little changed in March over February at 2.8%, and the 3 and 6 month measures of inflation are actually above that level. So we've said at the FOMC that we'll need greater confidence that inflation is moving sustainably towards 2% before it would be appropriate to ease policy. We took that cautious approach and sought that greater confidence so as not to overreact to the string of low inflation readings we had in the second half of last year. The recent data have clearly not given us greater confidence and instead indicate that it's likely going to take longer than expected to achieve that confidence. Wow. So,
right.
That's
a pretty big shift, I think, right? From just even 6 months ago, what the Fed has been saying.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. So I thought I'd put in a bit of a blurb. Why is this important? Because honestly, like, he's just stating facts, really. It's pretty obvious statement. But what it means, really, is it means that Jerome, as the chair of the FOMC, is openly acknowledging that there is a lack of progress in returning inflation back to their 2% goals. And this is important because a lot of people and the market just generally is kind of expecting the Fed to start cutting interest rates quite soon. They've said themselves, you know, earlier this year that they expect 3 rate cuts in 2024. That's what they expected. But they've also been very clear. Jerome's been very, very clear that this can only occur if they see, you know, more or further evidence that inflation is reliably on its path back down to 2%. Like, he's always said, yes, we want to cut rates and we think that will be appropriate, but we want to see more evidence that inflation is coming back down towards that 2% target. And this kind of acknowledgement, this is him acknowledging that inflation is not reliably on that path, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been interesting to watch because I think, yeah, that, you know, in December they made projections for 2024 and, you know, where they saw kind of rates going, and it, you know, generally between the different committee members, it looked like it was between 3 and even up to 5 rate cuts in 2024. And, you know, based on that, markets seem to kind of be expecting the first rate cut to be in March. Obviously, we've had that FOMC meeting and they decided to keep things stable. And then the next one that people kind of thought was going to be June. And this seems to be, yeah, this is a definitive, you know, statement from the Fed saying, hold on, like, you know, I know everyone at the start of the year thought maybe March, but definitely June. And, you know, I think now it's well, we're actually just waiting and seeing. He's kind of just confirming what I think he's been kind of implying, as you said, what he's been implying, you know, since the beginning of the year.
Yep. It says here, echoing recent statements by central bank officials, Powell indicated the current level of policy likely will stay in place until inflation gets closer to target. So this is the quote. It's appropriate to allow restrictive policy further time to work and allow the data and evolving outlook to guide us. It's appropriate to allow restrictive policy further time to work. So yeah, that's pretty, I think that's pretty set in stone. He's saying, look, guys, yeah, we said we might, but now we're saying that this is not looking as we were expecting it to look. And we are going to, I don't think they'll raise interest rates, but I think they'll just hold them for quite a while. Yeah, it says here, since July 2023, the Fed has kept its benchmark interest rate in the target range between 5.25 and 5.5%, the highest in 23 years. That's crazy that that's the highest in 23 years. That is remarkable. Yeah. That was the result of 11 consecutive rate hikes that began in March of 2022. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think a lot of people need it, but it is kind of another reminder that even kind of a 12-month projection from the Fed is kind of useless.
Yeah.
And I think my favorite, I spoke about this example in a interest rate video I did recently, but the 2021 Fed inflation projections is the perfect example of how kind of useless these projections are. So, you know, in March of 2021, they thought that the full year inflation would be 2.4%. For 2021. Then June came around and they realized, okay, things are a bit hotter. It's going to be 3.4% for the full year. September comes around. Okay, we're still a little wrong. We think it's going to be 4.2%. December, mid-December, this meeting was over the 13th and 14th of December 2021, 2 weeks before the end of the full year. So they have all of the data for, they certainly at least had 11 months of data for inflation and they just had to project the next month. Basically, they thought 5.3% for 2021 and it came in at 6.2%. So even 2 weeks in a meeting that they held, two weeks before the end of the year, they were off by an entire percent. And obviously that, you know, 2021 was a very unique, outstanding example, but the same thing applies to interest rate projections and other projections. They just start with where they think it's going to be. And then every month or every quarter, they just look at the data and they adjust it slightly. And often what they project at the start of the year and where things actually end up are completely different. And 2021 is the best example of that. 2.4% in March was their projection. Just not a 9-month projection, and they were off by a factor of 2.5 times. If inflation came in 2.5 times more hotter than they expected. So,
2.5 times more transitory than they anticipated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy, isn't it? That is the example that proves it, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's that quote from Peter Lynch? He's like, if you spend, I don't know, 10 minutes worrying about economics per year, you've wasted 8 minutes or something like that.
Yeah. Like we always say, you know, I think I quite enjoy observing it. I think it's fascinating. But yeah, it's, you know, take these projections with a pinch of salt and you know, that's
it doesn't affect how you invest.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. But you really, once you start following this stuff, I think it's interesting because you really can see how the market just kind of bounces based off these projections.
Yeah.
And you know, even of course the market doesn't know either. The market is just pricing things based on what the Fed thinks and the Fed doesn't know. So, that's why you get these, you know, month by month, quarterly, you know, 6 month, yearly fluctuations in the market.
The more I follow this stuff, it's exactly the point that you made before. The more I follow this stuff, the more it cements in my mind that nobody knows what the heck is going to happen. Because like if the Fed, who control interest rates, like they have their hand on the lever, if they control interest rates and they can't predict what inflation interest rates are going to be over even the short to medium term, then no one else can. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, if the person that's pulling the lever can't actually tell if they're going to pull the lever or not, then no one else is going to be able to predict it either.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then kind of Sorry, did you have anything
I was just going to throw it over to you because you have a little bit more to add on this, I think. Or something in the same wheelhouse, is that right?
Yeah, somewhat related to the update out of Jerome Powell. We got an update out of the IMF in regard to their economic outlook. So the International Monetary Fund on Tuesday slightly raised its global forecast, saying the economy of the world has proven surprisingly resilient despite inflationary pressures and monetary policy shifts. So it kind of, in other words, the US and many other countries around the world just continue to show really, really strong economic growth. And I think everybody, maybe not everybody, but I think most people generally thought that because rates went up so fast and from this, 20-year period basically of 0% interest rates or really low interest rates, that economies around the world and businesses and individuals would get hit really hard. And while, there obviously has been some real world impacts, surprisingly, there hasn't been any real shock. Like in the US, for example, the economy is still very, very strong. Rates have been reducing inflation, but businesses continue to post record revenues, record profits. And the labor market, as you kind of indicated, is extremely strong. You still have businesses trying to hire more employees than they can find. And, wages are going up at a slow rate, but they are going up at least, which is, surprising. It's surprisingly resilient.
Yeah, it's interesting that really we kind of look at the US, but the only companies that have really been caught out so far are the ones that left themselves just completely reliant on low interest rates.
Yes.
The banking crises where they left themselves way open and couldn't handle an increase in interest rates, they died. But everyone else, it has been interesting that a lot of businesses, sure, there's been a lot of changes, there's been a lot of cost cutting, but it hasn't toppled too many businesses, which has been interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So the IMF, their actual projection now is that global growth in 2024 will be 3.2%, which was only up slightly from their January forecast of 3.1%, but does kind of represent the same sentiment as what Jerome is seeing in the US, which is that the economy is a little bit stronger than expected. IMF's chief economist said the findings suggest the global economy is headed for a soft landing. Heard that word a lot of times this year. IMF also expects global inflation to keep falling in 2024 from 6.8% in 2023 to 5.9% in 2024. The chief said, as the global economy approaches a soft landing, the near-term priority for central banks is to ensure that inflation touches down smoothly by neither easing policies prematurely nor delaying too long and causing targets to undershoot. Which, is what the Fed obviously is dealing with right now. It's that balancing act. And they are right now, at least it seems like they're very cautious about easing too early and especially when economic conditions are already hot.
It's the one thing they could do to mess it up, right? That's the one thing they could do to mess it up.
It seems like that's more of a risk, at least right now, given the economic conditions, than leaving it too high for too long and causing too much business pain. There's been really no evidence of that. But there is evidence that the economy is strong. So if you lower interest rates and kind of inject some more, basically injecting more stimulus into the economy, the risk is that inflation not only doesn't go down, but then comes back.
Yeah, you make that hot economy hotter.
Yeah, exactly. This seems to be the sentiment from a lot of people. I'm not sure if you probably saw the Steve Eisman CNBC interview from a couple of weeks ago, and he's been basically saying the same thing, which is, why cut? They've currently basically got a soft landing. Who knows what's going to happen in the future, but what it looks like right now is inflation coming down and the economy is strong. So why tinker with that? Why make a fundamental change to interest rates and then potentially, throw another spanner in there? Why not just wait and we'll see how things play out?
Yeah. Yeah, that that's, I guess, the sentiment of a lot of people. There's Steve Eisman, Howard Marks is on that kind of bandwagon. Jamie Dimon is also on that bandwagon. Ray Dalio to some extent. is on that bandwagon. Yeah, you're exactly right. You get these really smart people saying, look, it seems from most measures that the economy is reasonably hot. We could achieve what they call this soft landing. It's like it's getting to be the new transitory, isn't it? This soft landing. You hear it everywhere.
Yeah.
But they just this need
mythical,
to...
Mythical soft landing.
Yeah, soft landing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We achieved the glorious soft landing. You never see that. We'll see. They just need to be... Yeah, the Fed just needs to be careful. That's one way they can mess it up, and that's by lowering interest rates too quickly. But it is surprising. It's really surprising that the global economy is actually doing all right. Like all things considered, I feel like we've been through a lot these last 3-4 years. All things considered,
you could say that. Yeah,
growth is still there. Mm. The people, businesses, we're hanging in there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's one business that's not doing too hot right now, given the interest rate increases. Do you want to take us through what's going on with Tesla?
Oh, yeah. Segway time. I was like, what do you say? Are you like Silicon Valley Bank or like what are you referencing? Yes, Tesla. Yeah, Tesla is, do you say Tesla or Tesla?
I say Tesla. Is it, Tesla. How are we supposed to pronounce it? I think you get a little bit of both.
Yeah, I don't know. Elon Musk says Tesla. So I say Tesla. Yeah. Franz von Holzhausen, the chief designer, says Tesla as well. So I say Tesla.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, it's obviously named after Nikolai Tesla. I don't know exactly how you pronounce his name. But anyway, back to what we're actually supposed to be talking about. So Tesla's going to lay off 10% of its workforce, Hamish, which I found quite interesting because, of course, earlier this month, we were talking about Tesla reporting their first annual decline in vehicle deliveries since 2020. So the first quarter deliveries fell by 8.5% on the year to 386,810. So, 8.5% reduction. We did a big spiel on why this might be a couple of weeks ago. Was it last? No, a couple of weeks ago.
So
definitely check out that podcast. We won't go back over it again here. But in response to that reduction in, they haven't explicitly said reduction in demand. They kind of blamed it here, there, but they didn't talk about demand. But it's reasonable to guess that part of it will be the tighter, you know, spending environment, the higher interest rates, people can't afford cars like Teslas, which, they're getting cheaper, but for the most part, they're still expensive vehicles. So there is a case to be made that demand might be a little bit lower because people can't afford them so much. And in response, Tesla will lay off more than 10% of its global workforce, according to a memo sent to employees by CEO Elon Musk.
Right.
It says here the company shares closed down more than 5% on Monday. Quote, as we prepare the company for our next phase of growth, it is extremely important to look at every aspect of the company for cost reductions and increasing productivity, Musk said in the memo obtained by CNBC. Quote, as a part of this effort, we have done a thorough review of the organization and made the difficult decision to reduce our headcount by more than 10% globally, the memo said. So this is interesting because Tesla had 140,473 employees as of December 2023. So 140,000 people. So 10% cut, obviously, you're looking at around 14,000 jobs. So it's significant. It's significant. Tesla shares have also taken a bruising in recent months, falling 31% year to date. While electric vehicle sales are still gaining popularity worldwide, their sales growth rate has slowed, especially for Tesla. And the company, of course, now faces more competition than ever. To the end of 2023, BYD temporarily dethroned Tesla as the world's top EV maker. Chinese smartphone company Xiaomi in March said it would sell its first electric car for far less than Tesla's Model 3. I'll believe that when I see it because that would be very difficult. Or they'll be taking a big L on every unit that they sell. Musk has previously recognized that China, home to a large Tesla factory, may also house the company's strongest competition. Quote, there's a lot of people who are out there who think that the top 10 car companies are going to be Tesla, followed by 9 Chinese car companies. I think they might not be wrong, Musk said in November.
Wow.
So,
that's a fascinating statement. That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's not, I guess there's not too much this story. It's just a little memo that CNBC caught. But yeah, it's interesting to see that, you know, after what we were talking about before, that they decide to cut by 10%.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think I've probably said this a couple of times, but you know, when you see interest rates go up, if you want to look for stress in the economy, the generally the place you look is businesses that have a cross section of they're a discretionary product, so a non kind of necessity product generally, and businesses where the product is being purchased with debt, it's being financed. So things like, you know, RVs or the auto industry, generally when rates go up, it pretty directly correlates to the price of those products going up. And if people are also dealing with other costs going up, and they don't, it's a discretionary purchase, they don't have to buy a new car, they just kind of want to, generally that's where you see pain first.
Yeah. Particularly with a vehicle, like, everyone, you know, I think are coming around to the idea of EVs, and everyone would love to drive EVs, but there's still the reality that you can buy other new ICE cars for a lot less. Like, yes, the upfront cost, the just straight upfront affordability of an ICE car is less. I know that we can talk about over the life of the car and the EV comes out on top over the life of the car, but that's not what gets people in the door. What gets people in the door is that initial, like, what do I have to pay right now for this car?
Yeah, and exactly.
And yeah, like, Teslas are great. They're great cars. I love my Tesla, but it is more expensive than a lot of cars, new cars out there. So yes, it makes sense.
Yeah. 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 And as you said, I mean, you know, Musk and Tesla didn't specifically say that, they didn't specifically point to demand as being an issue, in at least in the latest kind of deliveries note. But yeah, I'd be surprised if it wasn't at least a little bit of a factor.
Yeah, definitely. It just makes sense. It just makes sense. I'm not a crazy, like, I'm a Tesla shareholder. I'm not a crazy, like, I hate Tesla, and neither are you.
No.
Where I know a lot of people in the past have kind of come out and said, oh, there's demand problems, when they've just been like fear-mongering. But it does make sense in this kind of environment that that probably is a factor. And that's okay that that happens. That's very much to be expected in the auto industry.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it time?
Is it time?
Is it time?
Da, 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 da.
Hamish's fraud story of the week.
That I don't do every week, but every
Donald Trump
week.
Edition.
Yes.
What's going on, Hamish?
We've got a, this one's, we've got a case of family fraud.
family fraud.
Last family week, feud? I guess the last one was also family fraud, but that one was pillow talk. Pillow Talk Insider Trading. This is a
That's right. That was the husband that went out and bought a whole bunch of shares on the acquisition potential, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And said, look, honey, look how much money we've made. And then she divorced him and called the SEC.
That was so funny. Good on her. She's probably protecting her butt.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely great decision.
What's happening this time?
Yes, we've got two brothers have pleaded guilty to insider trading in securities of Donald Trump's new public company, Trump Media and Technology Group. This is a pretty fascinating story. So the story goes back to 2021. So in 2021, a blank check company is set up called Digital World Acquisition. And Digital World Acquisition, it's essentially, a blank check company or a SPAC is kind of the how they're kind of commonly known now, is essentially it's just a public company with a bank account. They get investors, they raise some money, and the purpose of this company is they want to find a private company that wants to go public without doing a traditional IPO, and they can just merge with that company, essentially bypassing the IPO process. So it's not super common, as a way of going public, but it's certainly in the last few years become a much more popular way for companies to go public. So instead of, you know, going through the traditional process, very regulatory heavy process of creating their own shares and selling them to investors, there's a public company that's already public, and they can just merge with a private company, and then of course through that merger, the private company essentially becomes a public company. Did you have something to say?
I was just going to say it's very 2020, 2021.
yeah, it's very.
It's a bit out of fashion now, but
yeah. It's very speculative retail investor focused kind of thing. That 2021 hype kind of period. But yeah, it's essentially, this is kind of a special purpose. It's called a special purpose acquisition company, or a SPAC. And it's also just known as a blank check company, which is, you know, exactly what it sounds like. It's a blank check. So Digital World Acquisition was this blank check company set up in 2021. And in June of 2021, three men were approached to be early investors in the SPAC, way before they even had any notion of which company they might acquire. So the first was Michael Schwartzman, the head of venture capital firm Rocket One Capital. Michael's brother, Gerald, and the chief investment officer, it's always a CIO, of Rocket One Capital, Bruce Gerlich, or Garlick. And essentially, these three men were approached to be early investors and became early investors in the SPAC. And as a part of that, they signed non-disclosure agreements, preventing them from sharing information about the SPAC, and also preventing them from trading the stock on public markets based on confidential information.
Right.
So essentially, they were investors in the SPAC. So they did a private sale to invest in the SPAC because they ran a venture capital company. But because this deal was private, and through this deal, they had access to information that wasn't yet public, they couldn't personally go out and just buy shares publicly. They could only manage the deal that they were doing, you know, privately.
Yeah, makes sense.
So of course, they abided by the non-disclosure agreements. They didn't trade the stock publicly, and that's the end of the story. That's it.
that's it. All right. Well, underwhelming. I thought that was going. I don't think that one will be turned into a feature film. Yeah.
No. That's not what happened. So they invested. They signed the non-disclosure agreements. Soon after, the brothers learned that the SPAC was in talks to merge with Trump Media, which is Trump's new company that operates Truth Social, his kind of Twitter creation that I think has what did we find out? It had like $3 million in revenue and $50 million a $50 million loss last year.
Dude, it's the next big thing. Trust me.
Yeah, it's the next big bankruptcy, if that's what you mean. So the brothers find out that it looks like the SPAC's going to merge with Trump Media,
and so they don't do anything illegal.
No, they don't. No, they don't. They say, this sounds like a great opportunity.
a good opportunity to uphold our moral standards and take no further action.
Yeah, exactly right. No, so the brothers went on to share insiders, this is according to the prosecutors. The brothers went on to, which is a bit of a hint, but the brothers went on to share the inside information with other people. And they themselves also bought the SPAC, knowing that it would rise in value upon the announcement of the merger.
Wait, the brothers did, or the people they told?
The brothers did.
Oh, right, okay.
And there was nothing kind of said about what happened to the people they told, but both of those things were noted, that not only did they commit, engage in insider trading, but they also told other people, and I'm guessing those other people probably did as well.
Yeah, I would assume so. Yes.
So that was in June. On the 20th of October 2021, the merger to take Trump's company public was announced. The stock, it went up a little bit. It went up 800% in a week.
Right.
The brothers sold their shares immediately after. The stock surged for a tidy $22 million profit.
Thank you very much. That'll get me a nice house.
We mentioned this last week. It's never like... These stories are never, they made a few thousand dollars, you know. It's always, they go way too far. It's always like, we bought like $10 million on private information.
It's always an insane figure. We bought like half the shares, basically.
Yeah. Like probably the biggest trade on the day that they made the investment. Like the most obvious trade. Like there's just like trading volume and this massive spike. Like, wait a minute.
It's always obvious.
Obvious thing to track from the SEC, just looking at the biggest trades before the announcement. Well, there it is.
Yeah, and it's odd that it's both of these brothers. They must have like spoken about this over their morning coffee, you know?
Yeah, no, just a pure coincidence. Yeah,
it's so coincidental. Yeah. There you go.
So, yeah, so they made a bunch of profit. This is back in 2021. And in 2023, last year, in June 2023, prosecutors finally caught up with the brothers, charging each of them with one count of securities fraud.
It's not that bad.
So, yeah,
just a measly one count felony.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's all right. How many counts did Bankman-Fried get? Several. This is just one count, Hamish.
Yeah, he was charged with a lot, I think. Wait, no. Did he get found guilty of all of his charges? I believe so. I think it was seven.
I don't know.
I think it was seven.
Yeah, it was quite a few.
Elizabeth Holmes was found not guilty of a couple of her charges.
Right,
she,
okay.
But it's just a single charge. How bad could it be?
How bad could it be? That's fine.
It's a slap on the wrist,
Hamish.
Yeah, exactly. So these brothers, they knew they were caught. So they both pled guilty last week at the hearing. Gerald, this is the brother that doesn't actually work at the venture capital firm. It's just the brother. He said, quote, "I've made a terrible mistake.
I am deeply ashamed of my actions and I won't do it again. I promise. Please go easy.
A continuous lapse in judgment. It reminds me of that Logan Paul apology. A
severe and continuous lapse in judgment. Gosh, it's so funny. Severe and continuous. It has not yet stopped.
So I thought that was quite funny. I've made a terrible mistake. I wish I had some audio to hear
how he said it. Yeah, that would be funny. Yeah.
So they both pleaded guilty. So they weren't contesting this. As soon as the SEC showed up at their house, they were like,
their goose was cooked.
They pled guilty. Sentencing will be on the 17th of July. Securities fraud is a federal felony charge and carries a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. Although the average prison sentence in federal fraud cases in the last year was around 2 years. So it does carry a pretty hefty sentence, but generally speaking, it's a fairly low prison sentence. Given the number of charges and the amount of money involved, so the $22 million is actually a pretty significant sum relative to kind of other fraud cases that kind of play out throughout the year. The federal sentencing guidelines will essentially recommend to the judge that they face 3 to 4 years each. 4 years for the brother who works at the VC firm and 3 years to the brother that doesn't. But of course, it's up to the judge's discretion at the end of the day. So sometimes people get no jail for a fraud charge. Sometimes they get 10 years. Sometimes they get 1 year. It's even though the recommendation, there are guidelines, 3 to 4 years, but it really depends case by case. And the judge generally for these kinds of white collar crimes. Generally takes into consideration the specific circumstances of the case very, very carefully. There you go. I guess we'll find out how many years they end up getting, if any.
Mm. There you go, Hamish. Great fraud story of the week. Of course, it's going to be to do with Trump media.
Yeah.
Classic. Classic. But with that said, that's everything, right? That's
everything, yeah.
That is the podcast for today. Hamish, any final thoughts for me? That's another podcast I listen to. At the end, sometimes the host just says to the other guy, "So, any final thoughts?" And then just stays quiet, and the other guy has to scramble to try and think of something to say.
I've got some final thoughts.
We're going to Omaha. That's exciting. It's only two weeks away, Hamish.
That is true, yeah. That's how better crazy than what I was going to say. I was just going to say don't commit fraud, yeah.
and on that note, everybody, that's a great place to end the podcast. Don't commit fraud. Hamish Hodder, 2024. Yeah. All right, well, with that said, let's wrap things up. Yes, Omaha is 2 weeks away. Less than 2 weeks away, Hamish. That's crazy that's coming up so quickly. But yes, we'll see you there, guys. But yeah, as always, thanks very much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. Hopefully you found that episode entertaining. And any comments or questions or topics you want us to cover, just let us know in the comment section of the YouTube version of the podcast, or you can drop it in the Spotify questions box. Apart from that, we are going to bounce. Thank you guys very much for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.
See you guys.